Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue, 8:23 on a Tuesday morning, headed for Washington, D.C. I'm excited. I've never seen the Marine Corps Marathon. I've only heard good things about it, only heard great things about it. And so I'm excited to, to be a part of it. Let me just a couple more thoughts on Beirut. Somebody sent me an email, Mac. What was the other times? One of the other times was I was in Ramadi in 2004, and we had four snipers that were killed on a rooftop. They fell asleep, and we didn't know what happened. We didn't know. All of a sudden, four Marines are dead, stabbed and shot to death. And you know what happened? Like how? This doesn't happen to us. We don't do this. And I remember it was the same kind of just baseball bat, not to the stomach, but a little bit higher, right, where you get the wind knocked out of you, but just crushed out of you, you know, and you don't know what happens. You don't know what happened. And, you know, the difference when you're forward, the difference when you're forward is that, you know, you kind of set your jaw and you try and tighten your belt and you try a little harder to do what you do better. And, you know, and everybody has that resolve. And then you go out and you find who did this and you kill them, right? You kill them or you capture them. And you make sure that you send a message to whoever who would do this that you'll pay. You know, and it's, but it's, it was not, I mean, those days are days that you never forget. In fact, I was in 2006, the four Marines that got killed were a sniper team with 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. And, Marine snipers are their own little cult, special cult. And, they have a rifle, the M40 sniper rifle, and that rifle was taken from them. So you had insurgents that had our rifle that in theory were shooting at us. And so I remember General Kelly actually, General Kelly went down to Takadam, which was a logistics base right outside, that had an airstrip, obviously, outside of Fallujah. So if you look at the city of Fallujah, on one side of the city is Camp Fallujah. On the other side of the city is the river. Go across the river and not too far of a distance. And our base, by the name of Takadam, Al Takadam, TQ for short, was there. That's where our mortuary affairs guys were. And so General Kelly had done this on more than one occasion. We had some guys drown in the Euphrates River that were supposed to swim out to an island and check it out. Two of them drowned. And so he went to the mortuary affairs guys and he, to find out what kind of condition the bodies were in, if there was anything those guys could tell him, as he did kind of a very quick what happened here, so he could tell General Mattis. So Kelly, obviously a trusted agent, he'd go out and talk to the principals. And so within 24 hours, you know, he could turn around and tell the CG, hey, here's probably 75% of what happened. And so he had gone down there, and one of the Marines, of the two that drowned, their bodies were in different condition. One had obviously struggled. One had a contusion on his right adjacent to his temple. So as they were swimming, the hypothesis was one swimmer got out in front of him, and then they somehow or other kind of crossed paths, and he got kicked in the head, and that knocked him out, and then he drowned. But anyway, the takeaway from that incident was that bodies tell you a lot. So when this happened, General Kelly went down to Takadam, and three of the four were killed in their sleep. The fourth one had been startled and fought, and you could tell by, you know, his hands, you could tell by the knife wounds, blah 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 blah. So anyway, the other thing that we learned was that our sniper rifle was gone. So I go back in 2006, and, you know, there's reports of snipers and blah, 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 blah. And so I get a call from a guy named Pat Looney. This is small world stuff. In fact, it's Mike's. In fact, I'll ask Mike about if he remembers this, and I'm sure he does. I'm sure he got there. This is kind of crazy now that I've put Mike into it, but the battalion commander of 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, is a guy who's been on the program before. His name's Paul Kennedy. He's currently the director of, he's Major General now. He's the director of the Office of Legislative Affairs, the Marine Corps, quote-unquote, lobbying branch, although we don't lobby. We simply provide information to Congress, because lobbying's against the law. Anyway, the commanding officer of the Marines, both Marine sets of Marines, the two that drowned and the four that were killed on the rooftop, was Paul Kennedy. He was a battalion commander of 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines in Ramadi. So Kennedy goes home, obviously. 2 years later, when I go back, a buddy of Kennedy's, a guy named Pat Looney, Mike's battalion commander, all of a sudden he calls over to the regiment and he says, "Mac, you're never going to believe this." And I said, "What?" And he said, "That dude we just killed, they had a guy who was watching Marines out of a car, and Marines on patrol, I want to say in Amtrak, if I'm not mistaken, noticed that this guy was following them, saw some kind of glare from inside the car, and so they got information on the car, and they started watching the car. Okay, they ultimately, whether they, we did it with a drone or whatnot, follow a car to a compound. We then send snipers to watch the compound. And so they're watching this dude, and ultimately they shoot his driver as his driver gets in the vehicle, I think it was. And then he hears the gunshot, and he runs and jumps in the vehicle, not realizing that the driver's dead or been shot already. And then he's shot in the back seat of the vehicle. I know this because I saw the pictures. So now they go, they wait till a QRF gets there. They go into the compound, and what do you think they find? our sniper rifle 2 years later. Yeah. It was, talk about a moment of elation. You know, the fact that we had lost a weapon, the fact that it was in their hands, the fact that they might be killing us with our own weapon, just, you talk about the mother of hate inside of you. And so I remember I got a hold of Paul Kennedy, and I said, hey, buddy, I got some good news for you. And he said, what's that? And I said, we got your sniper rifle back. He was like, what? And I said, yep. Smoked the dude that had it and his driver and your boy Looney. And Looney and Kennedy were good friends. So so anyway, that's kind of the long-winded version of, you know, days and events connected to days when really you get the life, I won't say crushed out of you, but it's certainly challenging on those days. When you don't understand and something's gone terribly wrong and you just, you have to wait because you're not gonna find the information that you want there. And you just, always, you know, you say your prayers for families who don't know people are dead yet, and who are living their last peaceful moments as family members. And at some point, somebody's going to walk up, and knock on their door and crush their world. And I always, for whatever reason, I always think about that. That somewhere there's some family who doesn't know what's coming around the world, and their lives going to be incredibly changed. And so, you know, I talked yesterday about, I'll read you an email from Jack Riley. This is from Libby, entitled Somber Day. Thank you for airing the ceremony, Max. Such a somber day. It makes me sad, but it also so encouraging to hear these great Marines memorialize the fallen and honor their families. I am thankful for their leadership. There is truly no greater love than the love these men have for their own. You know, when you try to put it in context for a family that loses so much, you know, obviously, these are tough guys, right? General Gray, who I want to talk about here in a minute, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Neller, and you see them get very emotional. You know, the Commandant couldn't get welcome home out to Vietnam veterans when he said, you know, you guys go to the airport, you Marines that are serving today, you haven't done anything, you go to the airport and everybody thanks you for your service, right? You know, do you know why they thank you? Because these guys who came home, they didn't get treated like this. And they said, we're not having this. We're going to educate people. We're going to change this. And they have. And then when he said that, his voice cracked, right? And you saw his jaw quiver. And he was trying to get the words out of his mouth, welcome home. But he was struggling. The words that I remember, that when you try to put it in context for families, is something that I heard General Kelly say after his son Robert was killed in Afghanistan on November 9th, 2010. And we were there to the south of where he was. He was with 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. And General Kelly made a speech, and he said, you know, I'm often asked how I felt about losing my son and whatnot. And he said, you know what, it really doesn't matter. He said the only thing that mattered was that is where he wanted to be. Right. He served as an infantryman in the battle for Fallujah. He was an 0352 assaultman. All right, graduated from Florida State. They told him he wouldn't be able to go to OCS for 2 years or something. He said, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'll enlist. So he enlisted. And he fought as a Lance Corporal in the Battle of Fallujah as an assaultman. And, he said, look, he knew what he was, a grown man. He knew what he was doing. That's where he wanted to be that day. So it doesn't matter what I thought. And the only thing that I think that's important for people to understand, somebody was telling me a story. Oh, it was my son Patrick telling me a story about listening to a PME. And I believe it was given by Willie Buell, the commanding officer of 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines during the Battle of Fallujah. And they got tasked to go back to Iraq after being part of the march up. They also got told where they were going and what they were going to do. And he and the sergeant major went to 30-something NCOs that were going to get out. Or let's just call it 20 NCOs that were going to get out, corporals and sergeants, and said, hey, we're going to need you. I know you're supposed to get out and get on with your life, but we're going to need you. And I think Patrick said something like 18 of them extended to go on a deployment, and a number of them were killed. And, you know, we can look at that as family members and say it's so wrong, it's so unfair. And you know what? It is, PME is professional military education. So Colonel Buell's now retired, so he went back last week and gave a class about the Battle of Fallujah and his experiences as a battalion commander commanding about 1,100 infantry Marines with 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines. And so there's nothing fair about it. The only thing that you know is there's, for certain people, there's certain choices that we make, and to serve is one of those. And nobody has to educate us about the dangers of it once you've been around it for a while. Whether it's being killed in a helicopter crash or a live fire incident, it's not work that is without danger. And we know that. And so, again, I think General Kelly's words are important. This is where he wanted to be. And as hard as that is sometimes to accept, and as hard as, it is to accept fate. I mean, honestly, if you do the numbers, I won't go into support people, but if you do the numbers of just infantry Marines that served in Iraq and then the percentage killed, right? What is your chance of being killed? And the chance of being killed is zero. So in a battalion, let's just say a high number during a 7-month deployment would have been 20 Marines killed. All right? That's 2%. Okay? That would be a high number. Most battalions did not break double digits. So you're talking about, you know, a less than 1% chance. You have 99% chance. There's not that many things in life that you're going to do that. So, again, and so the number's 0.00. I should do the math on it. 0.00 whatever. And that's just the infantry. If you count everybody else in there, the number's 0.00000 whatever. So, yeah. So, again, I want to read an email that Jack Riley sent me. I put up yesterday, if you haven't seen it, if you go to the website and you go to the read board, you'll see something that got sent to me by a gentleman by the name of Frank Reynolds. He is the nephew and namesake of, no, it's not on the read board. It's under podcast. Sorry about that. Yeah, if you go, if you, it's right on the top right now. It's Gatlin's Corner, a humbling surprise. PFC Frank Thomas was KIA during the Battle of Gatlin's Corner. His family listened. Click on that. And then scroll down. You'll see the telegram that got sent to his family. I'd never seen one of those telegrams. And I thought that we did casualty notifications in person. Received at 6:14 p.m. on April of 1967, but it doesn't give the date. So I'll read you the email but I mused. I have not been able to establish when we began notifying people in person, right? And so I saw the telegram. I assumed that that had been brought by a Western Union guy. This is what Jack Riley sent to me. The email you received from Frank Reynolds, Frankie Thomas's nephew, regarding his grandparents' telegram notification of his death was indeed hand-delivered. A Marine officer and Navy chaplain, as is also the current practice, notified the family in person. All enlisted WIA notifications during the Vietnam War were also in person by an officer accompanied by a staff NCO. After my first Purple Heart, I had a notation placed in my SRB that any future wounds notifications would be made by telegram only. Seeing two Marines in dress blues walking up the driveway is never good news for a loved one. Some information about Frank Reynolds. He was my first contact with anyone from Frankie Thomas's family. He is currently serving as a sheriff of Cherokee County in Georgia, north of Atlanta. He's served in the U.S. Army in Iraq. So a little bit of additional information. I wanted to talk about General Gray real quick. General Gray is an interesting guy. At 90 years old, right? Born on June 28th, 1928. He's 90 years old, and he still looks great. He still sounds great, and so awesome to see him. He was the 29th Commandant of the Marine Corps from July 1987 until his retirement in 1991. He moved the Marine Corps probably more than any Commandant I know of. He is the one who made the Marine Corps, I believe, the modern Marine Corps. He served for 41 years, from 1950 until 1991. He was born in Rahway, New Jersey. The family moved from the Jersey Shore community of Point Pleasant Beach. Actually moved there where he grew up. He played baseball, basketball, football, graduated from high school in the class of 1946. Went to Lafayette College and received a Bachelor of Science degree from the State University of New York, Lafayette. His Marine career. He enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1950, served overseas with Fleet Marine Force, attained the rank of sergeant before being commissioned a second lieutenant in 1952. By definition, serving in the enlisted ranks prior to becoming an officer makes General Gray a Mustang. Now, the story that I find really interesting is it relates to Gatlin's Corner. And the way it relates to Gatlin's Corner is this. After Gatlin's Corner, right, so that would have been March 30th, first week in April, April 1st, I think they get back, or sometime in the next few days, they go back to Camp Carroll, I believe, and when you hear Butch Neal tell it, he then gets flown to the 3rd Marine Division base at Don Ha. The division commander sits him down and talks to him and asks him what they were doing, essentially blaming the company commander. Lieutenant Neal says, no, it wasn't that way. When the division commander finds out it wasn't that way, he says, very well, thank you. And that's the end of the discussion. Pretty disappointing in that he didn't roll a map out and say, Lieutenant, tell me what happened. All right? Tell me what happened out there. He just dismissed him. As he's leaving the division CP, a major grabs him, and it's General Gray, future General Gray. It's Major Al Gray. And he said, hey, are you from India 39? Yes, sir, I am. Come over to this map. Sit down and tell me what happened. As a major, Gray joined the 12th Marine Regiment, 3rd Marine Division, in Vietnam in October of 1967. I'm sorry, in October of 1965, serving concurrently as regimental communications officer and the regimental training officer and the artillery aerial observer. He took command of a composite artillery battalion in the United States Free World Forces. Right, he took command of the artillery composite battalion and in the United States Free World Forces at Geo Linh in April of 1967. In September, Gray was reassigned to 3rd MAF in Da Nang, where he commanded the 1st Radio Battalion elements throughout I Corps until February of 1968. Following a brief tour in the United States, he returned to Vietnam from June to September 1969 in conjunction with surveillance and reconnaissance matters in the I Corps area. So, Radio Battalion... Okay, when you think about it, it sounds like radios, right? What they're actually focused on is intercepting radio communications of the other guy with translators, transcribing real-world stuff, and then moving that to the intel battalion. So radio battalion, intel battalion work very closely. So anyway, so it's interesting. So as a major... He goes to Vietnam in October of 65. He's still there in April of 67. So that's a year would be October 66. He's still there a year later, or 6 months later in April when he crosses paths with First Lieutenant Neal. And then he gets, and then he goes down. So it's almost like he's there for 2 years, over 2 years. In February of 1968, he then goes back to the United States. He then is sent back in a year and a half later with Radio Battalion. Interesting. General Gray. But again, he is the father of the Marine Corps' Renaissance. And in thought. So he's just kind of the interesting dichotomy of this kind of gruff guy who punches people when he promotes them or gives them an award and, hey, congratulations, poof, smoke him in the chest. But also this incredibly bright, guy who looks at the Marine Corps and says, no, we need to change the way we think, and how do I do this? And he, you know, he begins with a series of FMFMs, FMFM1, warfighting. And it's, I don't know if it's 100 pages, pamphlet that would fit in your cargo pocket. Read it, learn it, understand it. The biggest revolution was commander's intent. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you want to have happen, and yet the Marine Corps was not that way. The Marine Corps that I grew up in was not that way. You know, hey, Lieutenant, you do what I tell you to. When I want you to think, I'll unzip my pants or do something. We had buttons. I don't know why I say unzip, but because that's what I got told. I'll unzip my pants. I'll let you know, okay? Until then, just do what I tell you to. Yes, sir. And so, there was just this creative light blown into the Marine Corps. Ask why. Understand it. Because once we get off the rails, if you know why, you'll be able to craft what you're doing relative to what you understand. If all you know is that, yeah, I'm supposed to go here and do this, what happens when things change? And they certainly will. Well, he brought that in the Marine Corps. So he's a very interesting guy. And so I would love to have him on. But at 90 years old, I don't know how much. He doesn't do much publicly. He does appearances, and he'll do some speaking engagements for kind of close groups of Marines. So I am hopeful maybe that someday he will he'll come on. And but again, I've always been a great admirer of his, as you heard today, if you listened to the ceremony earlier today at Camp Lejeune, it was he's still a huge favorite in North Carolina. So it was great to see him. Let me just do a few news headlines since I haven't looked at them yet. We'll do a few of them and then we'll take a break, and then the gunner will join us. Well, I'll ask Mike about if he was around for that whole sniper thing. Kind of interesting. Mike and I, again, it happens on a fairly regular basis when we talk about these kind of things, but Mike and I at different places of the same events. Me in the command and control piece of it, and Mike out there running around, getting to do all the good stuff. Headline, even the Coast Guard has sharper snipers than the Marines. Since we're talking about snipers today. For the second year in a row, the Army's 75th Ranger Regiment beat out nearly 30 military, civilian, and foreign sniper teams at the 2018 International Sniper Competition held aboard Fort Benning, Georgia. The Corps' two-man team hailing from Quantico, Virginia, Scout Sniper Instructor School, placed 10th overall, just behind the Coast Guard Special Missions Training Detachment. It's the second year the Marine team has been bested by the Coast Guard. In 2017, the Corps snipers fared slightly better, taking home 7th place slot. So these are the... Does it have everybody's names? This shooting stuff, man, is a little crazy. First place, Rangers, Fort Benning, Georgia. Second place, the Colorado Army National Guard. Third place, the Swedish 17th Wing Force Rangers. Yeah, from Sweden. Fourth place, 82nd Airborne Division. From Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Fifth place, the Wisconsin Army National Guard. From Abbotsford, Wisconsin. Sixth place, the 3rd Princess Patricia Canadian Light Infantry. From Canada. Seventh place, Montana Army National Guard. Belgrade, Montana. Eighth place, 2nd Jutland Dragoon Regiment from Denmark. Ninth place, the U.S. Coast Guard Special Missions Training Detachment, National City, California. 10th place, U.S. Marine Corps Scout Sniper Instructor School, Quantico, Virginia. 11th place, 1st Special Forces Group, Joint Base Lewis-McChord. 12th place, the Irish Army Ranger Wing from Ireland. 13th place, the 7th Infantry Division, Joint Base Lewis-McChord. 14th place, the 173rd Airborne Brigade from Vicenza, Italy. 15th place, the 2nd Royal Australian Regiment from Australia. 16th place, 2nd Battalion of the Rifles from the United Kingdom. Tied for 17th, the 101st Airborne Division from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and the German Infantry Sniper School from Germany. 19th place, the 890th Paratrooper Battalion from Israel. 20th place, the Federal Bureau of Investigation from Atlanta, Georgia. 21st place, the 1st Battalion Royal New Zealanders from New Zealand. 25th place, United States Navy Naval Special Warfare Group 1, San Diego, California. SEALs. Yo. 28th place, 25th Infantry Division. 30th place, 3rd Infantry Division, Fort Stewart, Georgia. So, the whole shooting, we'll ask Mike about that. The whole shooting thing, it's like if you have a guy who could shoot, you win. Yeah, he's awesome. If you sent 10 teams, it would be interested if you had a much larger competition. And so you see what organizationally, how one would fare. So, first female complete second phase of Marine Raider selection. No female Marine has yet to successfully navigate the elite Marine Raider assessment selection and individual training course to earn the coveted 0372 critical skills operator job field. One female Marine has moved the baton a little further. Last month, Sergeant Bailey Weiss, an aviation maintenance controller, became the first female Marine to complete the second phase of Marine Corps Special Operations Command Assessment and Selection course, military.com reported. Four women and five attempts total have been made by female Marines at the MARSOC selection, said Major Nick Manweiler, a spokesman for MARSOC. Only Weiss has made it through phase two. She ultimately was not selected to move to the next phase of ITC, a nearly nine-month training evolution where Marine Raiders learn to hone their skills to become special operators, military.com reported. The Raiders assessment and selection is divided into two phases. The first highly competitive phase is nearly 3 weeks long, includes ruck runs, swimming, classroom instruction. Second phase helps Corps identify successful candidates who share traits with elite special operators who would be successful in the job field. Since being passed over in selection, Weiss told military.com that she is leaving the Corps with plans to begin a master's degree in international relations and earn her commission in the North Carolina National Guard. Be interesting to see once she gets commissioned in the North Carolina National Guard if she attempts to go Special Forces, United States Army. You know, but the way the story is written, it's like she completes it, doesn't, and then you have to read to the second to the last, third to the last, fourth to the last. She ultimately was not selected to move into the next phase of ITC, a nearly nine-month training evolution where Raiders learn to hone their skills, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that is not a short pipeline. I need to track her down. Get her on. A story that I hate. Service member killed in suspected insider attack in Afghanistan. A service member with NATO's mission to Afghanistan was killed in Herat province on Monday. Two additional service members were wounded in the same incident, said officials with Operation Resolute Support. Initial reports indicate the attack was committed by a member of the Afghan security forces, a statement read. So, according to the Defense Casualty Analysis System, 8 U.S. military members have been killed and 85 wounded in Afghanistan so far in 2018. I was wondering about that number the other day. So number of KIA in Afghanistan this year is 8. United States Navy is in the Taiwan Straits. Now the Taiwan Straits are north of the South China Sea. It is the body of water between China and Taiwan. China says that's ours. Taiwan's ours. It's all ours. We own everything. Sorry, bro. We don't play that game. The U.S. Navy sailed 2 guided missile warships through the Strait of Taiwan on Monday in what Taipei Ministry of Defense described as routine passage through international waters. Officials in Beijing have yet to comment on the passage of the American destroyer and cruiser, but in the past, the Chinese government has taken a hard line with Navy vessels transiting the waterway separating China and Taiwan. The USS Curtis Wilbur and the USS Antietam conducted routine, driving through international waters. I talked to you about yesterday a story about there's a SEAL in the brig waiting for his Article 32 hearing. This story in the last 24 hours, a second Navy SEAL charged in war crimes probe. Authorities in California on Thursday of last week charged a second Navy SEAL in connection with an ongoing war crime probe tied to the alleged stabbing execution of an Islamic State detainee in Iraq last year. Although he wasn't present during the alleged homicide near the city of Mosul in 2017, Lieutenant Jake Portier faces an upcoming Article 32 hearing for what authorities say was his help in covering up a string of war crimes committed by enlisted SEAL leader Special Operations Chief Edward Eddie Gallagher. Accused of dereliction of duty, the highly decorated Portier insists he's innocent, and his high-profile San Diego civilian-based defense attorney Jeremiah Sullivan believes he'll be exonerated as merely the officer who received the allegations of Gallagher's misconduct from a lead petty officer and reported them up the chain of command. So that story continues to unfold. Let me just real quick do top 5 stories in early bird. We'll take a break and then we'll get the gunner on. And I've got a bunch of stuff to talk to Mike about today. Number 1, charged with war crimes and stuck in the brig, Navy SEAL vows to fight on. That was the story we talked about yesterday. Subsequent to that story, a second story has come out with the essentially the indictment of a Navy lieutenant, the equivalent of a Marine Corps captain, SEAL type, for conduct unbecoming and dereliction of duty. 2, assassins threaten multi-billion dollar U.S. effort to keep Afghan airmen flying. These are all yesterday's stories. Not sure why they haven't updated. We'll see if we can get to them another way. This is, if you go to Military Times, it's just interesting the way headlines get written, right? Misleading headline, first female complete second phase of Marine Raider selection. Doesn't tell you that she's already, it doesn't tell you that she's already been, she was not selected to go to the third phase. I guess that would, maybe you wouldn't read the story then. Again, So the SEALs finished 25th in this sniper competition, but the story is that the Coast Guard finishes, you know, ahead of the Marine Corps. That's the headline. So interesting choice of the way we frame the story. All right. Yeah, you know that it's going to piss Marines off and make them read it. All right, we will take a break when we come back. The Gunner will join us, Mike Musselman, on this Tuesday. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Readboard page at allmarineradio.com.